Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
To HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. First up, we're going to hear from Serena Barr, a young woman who will be taking us through how she's coped with the COVID-19 isolation.
So tell me a little bit about how you've been coping with the whole COVID-19 situation.
So every day I just kind of have the same routine to keep me sane. I've been waking up every day around 1 p.m. and doing an ab workout, and I go for a run, and then I come home, maybe do some groceries, laundry, and I'm glued to the couch probably from 4 p.m. until maybe like 12 in the morning, just watching Netflix and with my friend and my boyfriend. That's pretty much all I do.
So when you mention the workout, do you think that that helps people deal with the whole mental health strain of being so isolated in these conditions?
Yeah. For me personally, I've been active. I've been physically active since I was very, very little. So dealing with like certain anxieties, working out and being physically active has helped me tremendously, and I think that it helps a lot of people, actually. It gets your minds off of things, it releases endorphins that, like, just make you incredibly happy with your body and your brain. So I think that's an amazing thing to do in isolation.
So, you're in the Toronto area.
Yes.
What have you seen in terms of public reaction to this whole situation?
A lot, actually. It's insane because the grocery stores and all of the essential businesses have created like these, you know, when you go online now at the grocery store and there's, I don't know if they have this in Windsor, they probably do, but they have like tape where you're supposed to line up like 6 feet apart.
Oh,
and
yeah, we got that.
Did they have that in Windsor?
Yeah,
it's crazy. And there's lines outside the door, and there's like security guards like to let you in, and there's only like a certain amount of people allowed in places at a time. And to me, that's just like, I feel like we're in like a dystopian movie. it's crazy to me, you know? And there's lots of homeless people in this city because it's a huge city, and it's kind of sad to see that. Well, first of all, that they have nowhere to go, and second of all, there's still like I understand that they don't really have much, but people are still clumping together. there's still loads and loads of people, like homeless and or not, but still not social distancing. And it's a little crazy to me because it's weird to think that there's still people who don't believe in COVID and who don't take it seriously. And there's a lot of people in Toronto who do that. There's a lot.
But that's the thing. Denial is one of the biggest disabilities out there.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. when you mention the less fortunate, could mm-hmm. be that some people who are less fortunate do have mental health concerns and
yes.
therefore might not fully be aware of the whole COVID situation and what it really means.
Yes. Which is definitely another issue. And that's also super unfortunate because with people like with those disabilities and with those mental health issues, there's no, I guess they don't know that, they don't have the opportunities or they don't have the advantages to ask somebody for help or ask somebody like, what's going on? You know what I mean? Or I don't know. It's sad.
So yes. if you could send any message to those in power to provide support, what would you say?
Oh, that's kind of a loaded question. I have lots to say. I don't know. There's so much wrong with how this is being handled for everyone, I guess. The $2,000 a month for certain people who are out of a job does help to a certain extent. But I guess what I would say is that you guys should have tried to figure something out sooner, which is kind of an impossible demand because, like, there's no going back. You know what I mean? There's no way that they could have, well, we can go back and stop this sooner or whatever. But I don't know. I just don't think that they're dealing with this. Definitely a question I need to think about more.
I mean, no one could have necessarily seen this coming verbatim.
No, absolutely not. For sure, absolutely not.
Fact is, people are just kind of handling it in their own unique ways. And I'm thinking, since last time I had you on, you were actually volunteering at a disabilities event.
Yes.
Well, you've doubtlessly seen the sense of community and sort of coming together that they share.
Yeah.
Well, this whole situation kind of has that effect on the world at large because, well, people are realizing more and more that they need each other and
yes.
the priority should be just being there to respond to one another's needs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy because what I have learned from this experience so far is that we definitely take those like community moments and those beautiful moments for granted. We really do, because when I would help like help out with ICHA or with the STEPS program at my school and all that stuff, like I thought that was super fun and I thought that was so great to be like to be with these kids and to be with these adults and I was so happy, but that was just like every day, like every other day kind of thing. You know what I mean? And then I would just take it for granted because it's always there, you know? And
so
all these, like, pardon?
So it was kind of when it's happening, it's the greatest thing, but it's not
yeah.
first and foremost.
But exactly. And it's like, yes, this is amazing, but it'll always be here. I can always come back to this. You know what I mean? But now, everything's been taken away. And I'm kind of sitting there and I'm like, I should have appreciated that more. When I'm with my friends, I should appreciate being with them more. You know what I mean? Or when I'm at the grocery store and I bump into someone or knock something over and we rush to help each other, I should appreciate those little moments more. You know what I mean? Because this is crazy. I can't even do that. I can't even bump into someone on accident. It's because now it's scary to do that. It's crazy. It's crazy. Like those, it's just crazy, Cameron. I don't know what to tell you.
So, in a way, it's kind of a gift because a lot of people are recognizing more what really matters, I think.
Yeah. we say that now, and I'm sure lots of people have the same thing growing through their minds where they're like, oh, like, I can't wait till this is over because I should have appreciated everything more. And yeah, it's true, you should, but then as soon as this is over, Cam, I don't think anyone's going to change.
I live in hope.
I hope so, and I think that some people will. But unfortunately, the reality of things, a lot of people won't change, and a lot of people will go back to how they used to be. Still take things for granted, you know?
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do the interview here.
Of course. I hope I was good enough for you.
Absolutely.
In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Sarah Uden from Smile Canada.
So tell me a little bit about your connection to Smile.
My connection to Smile. So I've been working for Smile for about a year now as a service navigator / case coordinator. So I basically, whenever a new family wants to join, I meet with them, I assess their needs, and if they want any information on the existing services, or if they want any of our services, I am the one who directs them. And for existing families, I regularly call in and check in on them and see if they need anything and things like that in terms of any services or any information, once again.
So how has the work changed given the whole COVID situation?
So the work has changed quite a bit. Our families have unique situations because they cannot, because children now cannot go to school and everybody's now at home. It's a completely different situation, and they need things like more computers, more devices, because now schooling is even online. And some of the parents are also working from home now too. So some of the needs have, gone higher, like things for like technology and all that. And a lot of the parents can't even go to the grocery stores and go to get necessities because they're scared of bringing some, COVID inside their home. And because it's especially vulnerable population, it's just really been challenging for our families.
So how are you getting around these challenges to still provide support?
Yeah, that's a very good question, because what we're doing now is that we're calling in like weekly to all our families to make sure they have the necessities, and if they don't, we drop it off now, and which we never did before. Things like necessary groceries, diapers, etc. And now we do things online, like, our mom support group and parent coaching, even online, things like that. We're all doing it online, and activity tip sheets. Now parents need to plan out things for kids because they're not going to school, so they have less activity. They cannot go to parks. So now parents are doing all of it. So we are trying to help them by preparing these tip sheets and some activities for the children at home.
So has the month of Ramadan affected how you support the Muslim population?
Yes, Ramadan has been very different this time around because in Ramadan it's a very spiritual sort of connection with our community as well. We always gather together. We have family and friends over. We kind of do this together. It's a month it's a very social month as well. And we grow together spiritually. So, and we also require help from others, from our family, from our friends. So because people cannot meet them, it's just been difficult for everybody. Now everybody is fasting, and they have to do all these other things that they haven't been able to, they're not used to doing. So it's just been very, very challenging. The Ramadan in self-isolation during this pandemic, it's been very, very challenging for everybody, for us, for our families. And so we have to do some extra efforts. We have to make sure that our families are, we have to, do extra check-ins and everything to make sure they're doing okay. And our efforts have been the same throughout how we started responding to the pandemic. So we just started doing increased of everything because of Ramadan.
So in your time with Smile, what's been the greatest success moment you've witnessed?
The greatest success moment is any time when you help a family out, or you see that smile on someone, when you help someone out with information or funding or anything like that, you know, something they have not had access to, and you help them, you advocate for them. So that whenever I do that, I feel like whatever my efforts have been with Smile are successful. And every time I see that smile on a family, or every time I hear that, you know, I have made a difference, it's a very rewarding experience.
So what message would you send to the community about the need to stay together as a community despite the pandemic?
I would say that it is very, very, for us as a community, it's very important to stay connected. Doing things online can feel disconnected, and it's just, we're going to get through this together by being connected online and through phone, and checking up on others. Very important to check up on, you know, on your family or neighbors or any relatives or anything like that. So it's really important to do check-ins to make sure that they're doing okay. Even just a 2-minute phone call helps.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Serena Barr, a young woman who shared her insights into the whole COVID situation, and from Sarah Uden from Smile Canada. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Toby Harris from Traverse. So tell me a little bit about Traverse.
Sure. So Traverse Independence actually started many years ago, over 30 years ago, and it was one of the original participation houses which formed under the Ontario Federation for Cerebral Palsy. And there was quite a number of them around the province. And there's still a few left that have retained that name, although people seem to be moving on to different names. And we really did start with a group of moms whose kids had cerebral palsy. And they lobbied the government at the time, which would have been under the Ministry of Community and Social Services, not the Ministry of Health. So lots of lobbying. I kind of equate it to the Marching Mothers with the March of Dimes and the Dimes line to get programming for their kids. And we were one of the, we being Participation House, one of the successful organizations in getting one of the very first supportive housing programs. So that's how Participation House started, and we did start with one supportive housing program. And their kids moved in, and a few other kids moved in and became a family in the supportive housing building. We had, I think they had 15 units at the time. And to this day, some of those folks still live in our supportive housing. And they're well into their 60s and 70s at this point. So that was sort of the beginning of our history.
So,
yeah.
So I'm wondering,
When you say supported housing, I take it that takes into consideration things like accessible spaces, furniture that would be safe for a person with a disability to actually be able to use.
Absolutely. And supportive housing is actually a term, I think, that the government gave housing programs back in the day. And really what it is a cluster of apartments in a apartment building, so in an integrated setting, where the client or tenant or consumer has their own apartment, but staff are in that building 24 hours a day, 24/7. So typically, the original vision for supportive housing might have been somebody with a spinal cord injury who or cerebral palsy, but who needed books, attendance services on a regular basis, and then some on-call services. And so those programs that we still have today, and we have two buildings with supportive housing, that's exactly how they are. The consumer, the client, has their own lease with the landlord. It's their own apartment, their own furniture, and they were designed to be accessible, so that the person and, you know, logic was sort of put into location and transportation and amenities in terms of building these buildings. So, yeah.
So, what are some of the challenges connected with your work in finding these individuals the right space and the right services?
Well, I think there's a lack of housing. But I will say we had sort of an evolution here when we moved into becoming Traverse Independent. And there was a period of time, probably 20 years ago, which you might have heard about, where folks with brain injuries were all living in the state. Because Ontario did not have any brain injury services. And so, again, the government at the time decided to rebate all those folks back to Ontario. So they opened up a huge pot of money and approached pretty well all the supportive housing providers to say, are you interested in expanding to also work with people with brain injury? So that's how Traverse sort of got their launch into the brain injury side of things. And our first program was we built a group home, and we actually brought a fellow back from the state who lived with us for his whole life, actually.
So.
And from there, our brain injury programs really exploded. So we've become more known, I think, now for brain injury services than adults with physical disabilities, because we do offer a level of sort of more supported living than independent living. So even some of the folks with physical disabilities that live with us don't necessarily direct their own care and manage their own affairs. So we provide more guidance and support than might be typical with another provider like the independent living, ILC, so, or wealth independent living.
So,
yeah.
So I'm wondering, in your time doing this work, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
I think for us, it's been... I've very much appreciated the fact that adults with brain injuries are starting to be recognized as a population that needs support. I think that adults with physical disabilities... 30 years ago, marched loudly and got lots of, not lots, but they got some recognition from the government that they needed these unique programs like supportive housing. But adults with brain injuries have been left by the wayside, and there's many, many, many of them. So I think the biggest success has been just exactly that finally people are realizing that brain injuries are a serious thing. They can be a disability for life. A person might need ongoing support if they have a brain injury. And that all kind of came from Sidney Crosby, the hockey player that had all the concussions, and people realizing that a concussion is a brain injury.
Well, I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
My friends, Getting used to this state of affairs, this new normal, can be especially difficult, including for those who have disabilities. For the fact is, if you're someone who goes to a job and learns your craft by rote, as many people with disabilities do, learning best by pattern, this has got to be a disruption to that. This has got to be raising the questions of, why am I not going today, or what's the situation? And there's been so much misinformation out there about what funding will impact that, or what will protect you from this, or that whole thing. I implore you, my friends, get it from an informed source. Don't take anything just for granted. And the truth of the matter is, any person with a disability out there who would be working, they're contributing to society. Why? Because they need to, and on some level they want to. There are many people in the disability community who could just take a lifetime's worth of funding, leave it at that. But there are many others who say, no, I'm not going to go that road, because I don't think that my life and my potential need necessarily be wasted or undervalued. And right now, I think everyone's kind of feeling that impact of not being at their fullest, not being able to contribute all they want to. But, as we've heard in recent weeks, there are ways, there are things that can be done. And the truth is, we all must look at these options we do have in terms of just reaching our full potential. Lord only knows when the world will go back to normal, but the lessons we're learning here can be a source of strength. They can be something that we can carry forward. We can say, okay, so I can't make it into the office today, but maybe I can work from home. Maybe I can do something good for my work and for my people. And how is it that we haven't thought of these things before? Many people with disabilities do have those issues of transportation and ease of access to a building. This is just leveling the playing field. Now that we're realizing that work can be done remotely, that opens up a whole new world of possibilities. Whereas an employer might have thought once, no, we can't get this person into the building, therefore we don't have work for them. Eyes are being opened, my friends. Possibilities created. And the truth is, we have to keep on moving forward in this way. We have to keep on giving it our best, knowing that those around us are doing the very same. Honestly, my heart goes out to those children with disabilities in the most remote communities, because, well, time at school, time among friends might be all they really have. And it's sad to say it, but finding new ways to reach out can make it possible to keep those connections. There have been a million interpretations of this whole thing. A curse, a test, a sign of the divine. However you choose to look at it, life must continue. Strength must continue. And people are still going to need to recognize their full and great potential. And people with disabilities are no different in that sense. So, why don't we take a cue from the innovative thought process that a person with a disability brings to the table. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.